Hello and welcome to episode 100 of Must See Matches. I am 100 years old, Kieran Lefort, and joining me as always, the man behind Must See Matches, 100 books a year, Mark Buckledy. Mark, how's it going?
I'm good, thanks. The worrying thing is that's not an exaggeration.
No, I know. It's why I said it. This week, we are covering Bret Hart versus Owen Hart, WrestleMania 10, March the 20th, 1994, Madison Square Garden. And our guest this week, our final new guest, the man who once took a rolled-up magazine to the eye from my wrestling-hating girlfriend at the time and lived to tell the tale, RJ Singh. RJ, how you doing?
I am great. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me in what is probably my favourite WrestleMania match of all time. So,
Yeah, you kind of hinted as much on Twitter like a few months ago or so when like clips of it were doing the rounds. And I made a mental note, ask when we get round to this. And I was really happy when you said yes.
Absolutely. I think it's, you know, I'm sure, you know, we'll get into it as we see. But I think it's a masterpiece of a match, especially for its time. Mm. And when people often say, you know, their favorite WrestleMania matches, you know, you often get Bret versus Stone Cold from WrestleMania 13, which, you know, is a fantastic match and that, you know, in its own right. But this for me is especially having appreciation as a wrestler and watching past matches. I think this one just delivers on every single front, which is why, you know, it's my pick as one of my favourites.
All right. Well, we will delve into that over the course of the next hour or whatever, but I want to dial it back a bit. How did you become a wrestling fan in the first place? What bit you?
It was probably seeing The Ultimate Warrior, seeing Sting, seeing Hulk Hogan. You know, I did grow up, you know, I was born in the early 80s, so, you know, a lot of guys sort of my age probably would say things like World of Sport, and I do have a little bit of a recollection of watching World of Sport, but really it was being captured by watching WWF on VHS. For those who remember VHS, I remember, you know, friends getting hold of some VHS tapes of WWF and passing on to us, and, you know, seeing Hulk Hogan, seeing Albert Warris, you know, and seeing Sting in WCW, those kinds of wrestlers, those like real superhero type wrestlers who, you know, were hugely colorful, hugely muscular, screaming down the camera, those kind of wrestlers. And because you know, to me as a kid watching it, they look like superheroes come to life, and I was just captured watching them, you know. That they kind of gave me the wrestling bug.
And as Brits, we didn't tend to do that, like wrestlers or otherwise. There was no face paint, no screaming into the camera, none of that kind of thing.
Absolutely. So, I mean, they were so larger than life, you know, compared to British wrestling. When you then, you know, compare, and I mean, there were great characters in British wrestling, you know, around that time as well. But, you know, these guys were dialed up to 11. So it was fantastic.
What was the catalyst from there to training and then like becoming a wrestler then?
It was that, I mean, the lifelong love of wrestling as a, you know, as a fan all the way, you know, from being a child through my teen years. And one day I had stumbled across a wrestling poster in my hometown where I live, and it was live wrestling. I'd never seen live wrestling. I was about 19 years old, I think. But I'd never seen a live wrestling show. I'd only ever watched it on TV. So there was a live wrestling show that had come to my hometown, which was FWA. And it's still in its infancy, as it were. I think it was actually in the year 2000. It was July 2000. So I saw this poster for it, and I was like, oh, I might go check that out. I was in university at the time. I'd just sort of coming to the end of my first year of university. So I was like, oh, I'm going to go check out this wrestling show. So I went and watched it. Wasn't well attended. it was a great venue. It was a great venue. It's what's known as Hartford Theatre now, but it was called Castle Hall back then.
You might want to have a word with Cage Match, because they say you were in the match.
Oh, I get this all the time. So I wasn't in the match. I just get this all the time because it was a Scottish guy, you know, part wrestler, part manager, called Ross the Boss Gordon.
Oh, Ross Gordon as opposed to Ross Jordan.
There you go.
And right, that's funny.
Lies. Yeah. And I get that all the time. People say that all the time. They're like, oh, yeah, according to Cage Match, you were in this match. I was like, no, I wasn't in this match. But that was the first FWA show I ever watched.
I see.
That I ever went to. So... and at the end of that show, I spoke to Mark Sloan, who, you know, had his training school in Portsmouth. And I said to him, you know, how'd you get involved? He gave me details, and, you know, Mark was running these training camps, at the time. So, I think it was March of the following year, 2001. So it was, you know, something over a little bit of a year later, was I signed up to one of his training camps. And I did a 3-day camp down in Portsmouth, which was fantastic. But I said to Mark, you know, I live in London. I just don't have a car. I don't have transport to Portsmouth every week. And he said, oh, actually, FW are opening up a London school. And thankfully, they opened up in Finsbury Park. I was living in Southgate. So Finsbury Park, a couple of stops on the Piccadilly line was fantastic. So, yeah. And so I started going to the London training school and just kind of went from there. And by the end of 2001, I had my debut match. So.
So now, having been in the business over 20 years, what still gets you excited about wrestling? I mean, the doing of it rather than wrestling as a nebulous concept.
Yeah, I mean, the doing of it is still that. It's just
because I saw you retire at least once.
Yeah, the first time I retired. I'm nearly at the 10-year anniversary of my first
you
retirement.
You are, yeah. I was figuring that out the other day, actually.
It's nearly been 10 years since I had my first one. I think that was just the headspace I was in. You know, when I think back to 2014, when I said I was going to jack it in, it's just the kind of headspace I was in at the time, where just, you know, other external factors. There was nothing about wrestling really that had put me off wrestling or said, you know, I don't want to wrestle anymore. It was just all the external factors outside of wrestling that kind of pushed me in that direction.
Yeah.
You know, something which, you know, I did a 180 on in back by the time of 2016. You know, I stayed out of the ring all of 2015, but by 2016 I was back in the ring again. So and it's always been external factors. It's always been things outside of wrestling that have made me stop wrestling for periods of time or step away from wrestling. So but I still do it because I still love the crowd interaction. I think it's one of the purest forms of theatre and performance doing wrestling, where it's just, you know, crowd connections, you know, being able to sway the emotions of a crowd and you know, to get a particular reaction from the crowd. I think it's a really powerful feeling to kind of command an entire room of people through what you're doing. So I think, you know, and having that, just that excitement before you step out through the curtain, which I still get now, even now I still get that buzz, you know, heading out to the curtain. And I think that's what keeps me in it. By a thread, because, you know, my knees, my hips, my shoulders, my elbows, everything is, you know, at the grand age now, 43, it's definitely a young man's game. When you realize how much younger a lot of the other wrestlers are now, in comparison to me, I can see why it's a young man's game, because the bumps and bruises don't seem to heal as quickly as they used to. So
yeah, you've always seemed to me as someone who's managed to like strike the balance of proper, in inverted commas, career, family life, and wrestling. Would you say you've got it all balanced about right?
Yeah, and you know, this is a question I always get asked, like, how do you do it? And I wish I could like pull out the secret formula to how it's done. But I really don't know how I do it. Some days I'm just like, I just managed to make it work. I think I have a very understanding wife who I balance things around my job. I don't let wrestling encroach on my real life. I keep the two things very, very separate, with some blending, of course. You know, I've been taking my daughter Jasmine, who's 5 now, and she's come to a couple of shows. She's actually done an entrance with me on one show, a promotion called Pro Wrestling East. She came out with me on my entrance, which was amazing. It was a really cool moment. So, you know, I get to take her to shows now. I get to come and watch. I kind of have to compartmentalize and have to give everything has to have its equal time and prioritize. You know, I just prioritize each one and say, right, you know, actually this weekend I'm focusing on family and I'm focusing on this, or, you know, this weekend this is that, but, you know, this week is wrestling. So it's just, it's about giving everything equal balance, I think, is how you do it.
Finally, I would normally ask our guest when they first saw the match, but I think more appropriate is how many times you think you've seen this match.
Oh god, that's really good. Yeah, I mean, especially, do you know what, I've probably watched it more in the last 2 years or so than when I originally watched it back when it happened, because it's one that not only have I used as a basis for some of my matches. I certainly remember a match I had in, I think it was early 22. I had a match against a wrestler called Harry Singh in Wrestling Resurgence up in Leicester.
Oh, and I have actually seen Harry Singh wrestling in Wrestling Resurgence. Yes.
There you go. And actually the match we had, which I believe was at the start. Yeah, it was at the start of 2022. It was January 2022. The match that we had together, I structured that a lot on this match. When I've done seminars, and I've got a seminar coming up in about 2 weeks or so, I'm going up to the House of Pain in Nottingham to do a seminar. And actually, this is one of the matches I'm going to take and do a match study with, because, excellent, you know, because I think it's such an important one for everyone to watch and understand.
Tremendous. Mark, you've mentioned many times that you got into wrestling in like 1999, 2000, and you didn't like to go back and watch old American wrestling. But I think I've heard you mention this was one you did go back to.
Yeah, this was one that I went back to, but I would put it in that bucket of matches like Magnum TA versus Tully Blanchard. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple of others where I think my taste and my appreciation for wrestling was at such an early stage that I didn't appreciate as much. And it must have been coming up for at least 15 years since I last saw this match, if not 20. And I'm definitely noticing and appreciating things now. And that's the thing. If you follow a hobby for long enough, your tastes change, and what you notice changes, and what you appreciate changes.
Given that you became a fan after he died, how much Owen Hart, other than this, have you seen?
Either nothing or one New Japan match, maybe.
Right, yeah.
I was tempted, actually, if I wasn't lazy this week, I was tempted to watch a couple of Owen Hart matches on YouTube just to get a gauge for what he was like outside of this. And I've seen the odd, like, clipped video here and there over the last couple of years as people basically taking matches and condensing them down into about 15 spots has become a thing.
Yes. Including this one, I noticed.
He probably is someone that I'd like to see more of. But honestly, this is really the only match that I know that I've seen of his.
Sure. And we've obviously talked about Brett a lot on this show, with him being in a ton of must-see matches.
Yeah.
How well did Owen do in the nominations? Because this is the only time we're going to be talking about Owen Hart.
Not great. He only had four other matches nominated, and they're all what I'd call mid-90s matches. So he had King of the Ring 94 against 1-2-3 Kid.
Okay.
The rematch with Brett at SummerSlam 94.
In the cage.
The Canadian Stampede match in 97. And a Raw match from Germany against British Bulldog in 97.
That you mentioned, I've seen all of those matches. And yes, I understand. If someone asked me to name five Owen Hart matches, it would be those four and this one, to be honest. So just quickly, because we haven't talked about him, Owen obviously was a Stampede mainstay, given that his family owned the place. But by the time we get here, he's also been through the UK for Dale Martin Promotions in 83 and 87 and All-Star in 91. New Japan in 87, 88, 89, 90 and 91, including the first two top of the Super Junior tournaments, now Best of the Super Junior, in 88 and 91. A month with the IWGP Junior title in 88. CWA in Germany, UWA in Mexico, including a tour under his Blue Blazer gimmick, his WWF gimmick, and even some WCW TV in 1991. He finally went full-time with the WWF at the end of 91 and became sort of a reliable lower-card tag team guy, first in the New Foundation with Jim Neidhart and then High Energy with Coco Beware, both teams sporting some incredible trousers, just gigantic, flappy, bright green 90s trousers. Supposedly, the original idea for this storyline was Brett versus Bruce Hart.
Ooh.
Mark's face when I said that. But Brett basically talked Vince McMahon into like dragging Owen out of mid-card hell and putting him in the spot instead. Like, he's already in the company. Why are we bringing in another one?
Especially when it's Bruce as the other one.
I think everybody apart from Bruce won in that situation. So normally with big American pay-per-view matches, I will watch the preceding month of TV. But in 1994, there's no point in doing that. US wrestling TV is different. Pay-per-view cycles don't work the way they do now. WCW wasn't nearly as much of a threat, so they didn't have to do big stuff on TV. WWF weren't even running monthly pay-per-views at this point. In Your House appears the next year to fill in the gaps in between the big pay-per-views. So on top of that, most of the major stuff for this happened at the pay-per-views in 1993. So Survivor Series, Brett, Owen, Bruce, and Keith Hart team up to battle Jerry the King Lawler and his knights. Sorry, what? Jerry Lawler's being investigated for what? Oh, they team up to face Shawn Michaels, brought back early from a drug suspension, and his knights. The Hart boys win handily, but Owen is the only one eliminated after he collides with Brett, who is walking the apron and gets fired off into the guardrail. After the match, he and Brett get into it, with Owen yelling about Brett getting in the way. Apparently, they did a run-through the day before, and Bruce was being his usual Bruce Hart self, trying to get as much shine on himself in the match as possible, resulting in Shawn Michaels absolutely wiping him out with, "If my brother was the world champion and the best in the business, I think I'd fucking quit arguing with him and start listening to him."
And when Shawn hyping up Brett,
yeah,
Jesus Christ.
The Knights apparently were Barry Horowitz, Greg Valentine, and either Jeff Gaylord or Glenn Jacobs. History seems fuzzy on the red one. So tempers have flared, and on Superstars, Owen challenges Brett to a match. But Brett says under no circumstances will he fight his brother. Over Christmas, Brett and Owen patch things up and decide they're going to make a bid for the tag title held by the Quebecers. That's Jacques the Mountie Rougeau and PCO Pierre-Carl Ouellet. Something they leave out of the video package before this is Brett's rather over-the-top assertion that he's going to give up his singles career to become a permanent tag team with his little brother. Title match goes down at the Royal Rumble, Hearts versus Quebecers. Les French Canadians work over Brett's knee. Brett ends up in a position where he could either tag Owen or put Pierre in the sharpshooter. He opts for the latter, but when he can't support his own weight in the hold, the referee stops the match in favour of the champions. Owen is furious. This selfish bastard could have tagged him and he would have taken on the Quebecers by himself and might have won.
Yeah.
And he lashes out at Brett and very famously kicks his leg out of his leg.
And the bit I like with that is Owen has justification. He can feel legitimately justified.
Yep. More important overall to the WWF, but a side note to our story here, is later that night, Brett would limp down the aisle and co-win the Royal Rumble with Lex Luger. On January 31st, Luger wins a coin toss to determine who would face Yokozuna for the title first at WrestleMania. And Brett would have this match and then face the winner of Lex versus Yoko. If Luger had lost the coin toss, Brett would have gone first with Yoko, and Lex versus Crush would have been the opener. I doubt that match would have featured in this project, and as with Bruce, I think everybody won in that situation.
Definitely.
And finally on TV, Brett agrees to the match and tells Owen, "This isn't the dungeon anymore, this is going to be a real dirty fight." So, this is the opener of WrestleMania 10.
It's also the longest match of WrestleMania 10.
Yes, it is.
It's one of the very rare times that, other than maybe the AEW era, one of the very rare times where the opener is the longest match on a big pay-per-view.
Mm.
Also, quickly going to pop in, this is coming from MSG. It's the last episode from MSG. We've actually had 6 episodes with matches from MSG.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had 11 episodes from New York City. Huh. So goodbye, New York. Goodbye, MSG.
Owen is out first, wearing Brett Shays that he rips up. I really like the pink Brett Hart sign with the straggly hair on it. It's a drawing of Brett with some wording on it and then like long, dark hair on it. Brett's entrance shot is tremendous, with him stepping out of the pink lit tunnel and the camera runs up to him and then leads him back to the ring. It's beautiful. I love it when they do that. Brett gives his shades to a very unimpressed looking small child.
We're also surrounded by maybe the largest patch of empty seats in the building.
Yeah, bit weird. Maybe that's the staff comp section. Who knows? Brett, Vince then kicks off his 10th WrestleMania with, "And now the fun is about to end."
Amazing.
I mean at the start, when you cut to Vince, he's saying yeah so much, it sounds like an early LA Knight promo.
I also noticed Why are there six blokes in suits having a meeting in the aisle on a live pay-per-view? Like, a year, 2 years later, that would never happen. Like, that is that's British wrestling seeping in there.
Yeah, definitely. That definitely looks like something we'd see in our local in our local theatre rather than Madison Square Garden at WrestleMania.
Not very WrestleMania.
No.
So, lock up. Owen uses strength just to force a break and celebrates like he's just won the match.
I love that spot. I absolutely, honestly, it's
the simplest thing.
It's such good heat. And, my kind of travel buddy is a wrestler called Sunset Skip. Mm. And we often tag together these days, or we're on shows together. We're against each other. And the last time we wrestled each other, we locked up. Mm. And I just whispered to him, I was like, I'm going to Owen Hart this. And he knew exactly what I meant. I broke off and I just went, yeah. Double fist in the air, celebrating like I've won the match.
Yeah.
And just instant crowd heat. It's brilliant. I absolutely love it. And it's the first thing that happens.
It immediately sets up the heel.
Yeah.
And like how petty he is.
Yeah.
The second lockup, Brett reverses a headlock into a head scissors. Owen kips up out of it and again does an over-the-top celebration. Third time, Brett with a mat return holds onto the waist lock. Owen can't sit out of it and has to scramble into the ropes. Mm-hmm. Fourth lock up, Owen with the mat return and waist lock, but Brett is able to sit out, stand up, and then escape by running for the ropes and diving to the mat at the last second, sending Owen flying out to the floor.
Telling the story that Brett is the better mat technician and the better grappler.
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah. Owen is mad, comes back in and slaps Brett before chickening out to the corner when Brett advances on him. And I did get a giggle out of Earl Hebner telling Owen, don't be slapping nobody, knock it off, for a perfectly legal move. Lockup number five leads to hammerlocks, drop toe holds, headlocks, and eventually Brett getting control of an arm. Owen does some fancy lucha flippery to reverse it. And the moment Hebner walks around him, grabs a handful of Brett's hair to tug him to the mat. He then scuffs Brett's face with the sole of his boot and gets the watch it, you little shit point. There is alternate footage of this from the camera that was hanging directly above the ring. And it's a great close up of Brett's face for this moment. And I'm ever disappointed it's not in the live broadcast.
It's such a good camera shot. And as someone who has an older brother who I've, annoyed on many occasions, like, the look Brett gives Owen and the point he does, I was like, if you are a younger sibling who's annoyed your older sibling, that is a look you have seen 100 times or more. It's just so masterful. Brett was the master of the great facials. And one I think gets touted around a lot is Brett versus 123 Kid, where 123 Kid gives him the arm drag.
Mm.
And Brett kind of sits up and he kind of does this eyebrow raise like, oh, okay, this guy's got something. And this is just another great example of that, where Brett is just like, he scrapes his face and he's like, you little shit. It's amazing. It's such good storytelling. Mm. And again, Brett's true talent, which, people talk about Bret Hart as, he was the greatest mat technician of all time. Actually, Brett was one of the, if not the best storytellers of all time. And his matches just told brilliant stories. And it's already coming out here that that's what's happening, the way it's been structured, the way that actually, and it's interesting, Mark, what you said, that Brett is the better wrestler. Actually, I think what this match proves is two things, is that one, that Owen was as good as wrestler as Brett, both from a real standpoint and from the storyline standpoint.
Yeah.
But Owen still resorted to shithousery when he in order to really be the hell, he still resorted to those tactics.
Better when it comes to Brett, I think it shows that he's the more experienced wrestler. So like, he knows the tricks that Owen is using. He's seen them all before and has a counter for it.
But what I like is that Owen has clear strengths and Brett has clear strengths. They're both great wrestlers, but Owen is better with his strikes. Owen has more, other than some examples from Brett later, which are more technical big moves, Owen has more impact moves. Mm. So it's that kind of, they are clear different styles, which adds an element to it, but they are both great, and you can definitely see how good Owen. There's a spot I'll mention later. Mm. You can see how good Owen is.
Yeah, he's. I think that's part of the point. It's like he's not just a clone of Brett. This isn't just Brett Jr. Like he is his own man and has learned his own stuff from that traveling the world that I brought up earlier.
And that's what I appreciate about this match, especially coming back to it, is you can see that, and I think it's a better match than if it was Brett versus Brett Jr.
Yeah. So by this time, Owen's had enough of the scientific reversals and just elbows his way out of a hammerlock.
It's like one of the best elbow out of a hammerlock and cells I've seen. I don't know why, it's just so viscerally engaging.
They do a bit of rope running, ending with Brett doing a kind of grounded monkey flip kick to fling Owen across the ring. And I'll defer to the professional wrestler on the broadcast if he has a better name for this move. I couldn't think of one.
No, that's it, yeah.
Yeah. The crowd go nuts for the clothesline that sends Owen over the top of the floor, but Brett quickly goes after him and throws him back in so he can't just walk out. And he's like, you wanted this, come on, let's do it.
Yeah.
They shove back and forth, and this time it's Brett with the slap, who immediately, showing that he's older and more experienced, grabs a roll up for a near fall. Owen uses the hair to escape an arm lock, but Brett turns a clothesline, attempting to a crucifix for another two count, and gets in control of the arm again.
That's what I loved about this match, is that Brett is doing this strategy. As soon as he's going for a pin, he's immediately jumping on Owen and clamping on a hold so that Owen doesn't have the time to do something. And it's that kind of detail that I don't notice in a lot of matches, and it's just because of the style and the way this match is wrestled, you notice it, and I really appreciate it. And also, I like that earlier you had that sense of Brett getting a little rattled and his temper coming in. And from the matches I've seen, I kind of prefer emotional Brett. I kind of prefer where he plays it up a little bit, because personally, I find he can be a little bland, especially if he's against a strong personality. He kind of lets them shine and he fades back. And that's not how I enjoy Brett.
Yeah. I think there's a wonderful mirroring which happens a couple of times in this match. And the slap you just talked about is one of the mirrors that happens, in that obviously Owen gave Brett a slap at the start. So therefore, at this point now, Brett has returned that favour. And for me, again, that is very classic storytelling in wrestling. You can't have a heel slap a face and then not be slapped back at some point later in that match. And again, I think there was a couple of times in this match where they either mirror one another's moves or something like that. And I just think it's a brilliant way to storytell, is to have that as part of it.
Yeah, picking on what you said, Mark, about like whenever Owen gets out of a pin, Brett immediately like grabs a hold again. Something that's not mentioned on commentary and not really told, I think, in the lead-up story is, although this might be their first actual match, and it legitimately is the first time they were on opposite sides of a ring in front of a paid crowd, how many hundreds of times have they tussled in the dungeon or wrestled around the back garden, you know, that kind of thing. So Brett knows already, this is his brother. If he gives him an inch, he'll take a mile. So he has to stay on top of him, has to have a hold on him. So Owen takes it to rope running again. This time he hits a spinning leg lariat, followed by Brett's pose, and then simply stomps his brother out to the floor. He runs Brett back into the post, and then back inside, Brett takes a corner with his back almost as well as he takes them with his sternum. Owen's new plan is to go for the back. Backbreaker, camel clutch with added hair pulling and screaming into the face. But Brett gets his feet under him and throws a couple of elbows. Owen catches him coming out the ropes though with a lovely belly-to-belly suplex. Owen goes for a corner whip but gets reversed. He's a step ahead though, leaping up to the middle rope and coming back with a twisting crossbody. Brett, older, more experienced, sees it coming, rolls through into a cover for another near fall. But he was still the one taking the move. So he is selling more than Owen is, and Owen immediately pounces on him, like driving knees into his back. He might have had the cover, but he took the impact.
The level of logic in this match is impeccable. It's like every time I'm watching this, I'm picking out a little detail, and you can 100% see the logic of, okay, this has happened, then this has happened. And it's a match where You mentioned that Owen's new plan is work in the back.
Yes.
It's a very fluid structure of, you can argue that the story is Owen has a strategy, Brett has to find a counter, Owen finds a new strategy, yeah. Brett has to find a counter.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about this loads of times before, like this very simple basic wrestling structure of pick a limb and work on it. And so if a guy has his arm worked over at the beginning, he's submitting to an armbar at the end, for example, rather than a more organic way of finding a different strategy throughout a match.
Yeah. Whereas this, they do it twice because...
Yes.
And they do a great way of manoeuvring into the second.
Yes. So Brett kicks his legs on a slam attempt, forcing another cover, and Owen's kick out sends him rolling to the floor. Brett slips behind an attempted suplex back in, but Owen counters into this lovely bridging German suplex for a two count. Brett turns a vertical suplex into a small package, but Owen kicks out of that and reverses what would either be a side suplex or a backbreaker out of the ropes into a leaping tombstone. I must remind you, in March of 1994, there were no jumping tombstone pile drivers on American wrestling television. Like, this is IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion Owen Hart.
I don't know if it was this small package. There's a small package that Owen kicks out of. And it was like on my third watch of this. The bit that I love. So Brett's got his legs entwined in the small package. Owen pushes his hand to push Brett's leg away to open the package to escape. And the sheer quality of that of detail, it's like, most people don't bother with that level of detail. It's like you do a small package, you kick out. It doesn't matter. Most people, it doesn't matter.
No, people don't think about the mechanics of it. It's a given that this is not the finish. Therefore, the guy on top will just kind of let go. I see in sunset flips all the time. Someone does a sunset flip. They have the arms around the waist and then it's one, two, and they move their hands round the back to push their opponent out of it.
Yeah.
Drives me nuts. I've seen it 1,000 times as a wrestling fan. But yeah, you're right. It's thinking about the mechanics of how you'd actually get out of this move.
Yeah. And I think, you know, being that they, you know, they are on pay-per-view, they are at WrestleMania, there's two elements to that. One, I think, is that obviously, you know, Brett and Owen are so well-versed in that kind of wrestling of actually being so mechanical and actually making sure that everything is done properly. And two, I imagine you had Stu backstage rubbing his hands together like, if you don't get this right, kid, I'm gonna pull your arms off back in the dungeon. You know, they're gonna get it in the neck from Stu if it doesn't look fantastic.
It's taken 100 episodes to get our first Stu Hart impression on this show. I'm very impressed, thank you very much. To a huge cheer, Brett rolls clear of a top rope diving headbutt. Owen is up first, though, but Brett grabs him for a Manhattan drop and then mows him down with a clothesline for another near fall.
Owen's facial expressions on this sell for missing the headbutt is brilliant. He's like, he's blinking his eyes, he's holding his nose. It's a level of craft that I, especially for this style of wrestling, which is more you work safer, less stiff. I'm a big fan of Japanese wrestling, and there are some matches with some incredible detail and hold work. But in terms of the match,
but also
feeling,
people getting dropped on their heads.
Yes, whereas this feels like incredible craft to make it look good and to be safe.
Yes, yes. I mean, a quick aside, I noticed, again, shared on Twitter today, was the clip of Misawa Tiger suplexing Kobashi off the entrance stage. And yeah. That's a great match for details and for near-death experiences. So we get the painted Bret Hart gut punch into a Russian leg sweep, the backbreaker, and then a superbly shot middle rope pinpoint elbow with Bret flying away from the camera to connect. Owen kicks out of all of this and begs off into the corner. When he tries a sneaky kick, Bret's too quick and catches the foot. But Owen has a second foot, which catches him with an enzuigiri. Owen goes for the sharpshooter, and almost 15 minutes in, Brett finally resorts to rough tactics with a closed fist and reverses the hold. The crowd, sharpshooter's super over already, like the crowd are going nuts. But Owen again grabs the hair and rolls them out of it.
I don't think I've ever seen that counter for a sharpshooter. Or
what, just grab and roll, grab hair, roll over?
Mm. Yeah, oh, definitely the rolling that way.
Mm.
But yeah, it just works perfectly for the match, but also makes Owen look smart,
mm.
a good wrestler, but also a bit of a dick.
Yes. Brett's kick out of a reverse victory roll sends Owen to the floor, and Brett follows up with a plunger, but smashes his knee on the floor as he lands. When they get back in, Owen sees it, the limp immediately, and repeatedly kicks away at the knee, kicks his leg out of his leg again to drop him to the mat, and he just, now they're on the mat, and he's just working over the leg. Like, yeah. This is his lucky break. His plan was to go for the back, as we saw, but now Brett has hurt a different part of his body that the sharpshooter also affects, so he's double dipping. He's got a partially hurt back from earlier, and now as much damage as he can do to the knee before he can get the sharpshooter on him again.
Yeah, and that is a wonderful throwback, of course, to you know, when you were doing the introduction about the build-up towards this match, it's a wonderful throwback to that thing around him taking out Brett's leg.
Yeah.
And here it is again. It's that, you know, it's that leg that, you know, gave Brett problems a couple of months ago. And Owen's like a shark now. A shark that smelled blood, he's going to go straight for that leg. He's going to continue to attack that leg. It's just brilliant.
A shark that knows how to do dragon screws.
I'll get to that in a second. Yeah. What I was going to say was, I think now today that the kicking out the knee would be really signposted in the video package, and it would be one of the first things that the heel would go for, rather than leaving it for 15 minutes and it being an opportunism thing. Because as you said, RJ, like, this was 2 months ago. Like, we've all got niggling pains, but is the knee isn't going to hurt as much on March the 20th as it did in January.
Right.
It's not like it happened on Raw last week or whatever.
Exactly.
Yes, dragon screws, Mark. You can probably count on one hand the number of televised dragon screws in the WWF in the first half of the 90s. But here is one. Owen whips Brett to the mat and applies what I know is the European version of the figure four leg lock. Like, it's on kind of sideways. Quite like Jerry Lawler's look at that hold, even Bret Hart doesn't know that hold. Again, these were also as rare as hen's teeth in the WWF in 1994.
Yeah. Didn't Triple H adopt this move for a time?
Yeah,
as well?
Something like this was his submission when he was going through the Harley Race phase.
It was the Indian Deathlock, I think.
That's what they called it, yeah.
Yeah, see, I've known it by two names. So it's either the Indian Deathlock or the British Figure Four.
Yes.
I've heard it known as the British Figure Four as well.
I kind of went with the more PC version. Massive Let's Go Brett chant as Owen punishes the leg again. And Lawler brings up a good point. Brett still has his world title match coming up. Maybe he should give up now and save himself for the big prize. Another one for the WWF Dragon Screw drinking game, and Owen applies the traditional Ric Flair figure four. Again, celebrating while he's just got Brett in the hold.
Although, applies it to the wrong leg.
Doesn't matter, it hurts both legs. Do I have to call Chris Lanay again and we have a debate about what leg the figure four hurts?
I thought Chris Lanay was on my side.
Professional wrestler, which leg does the figure four hurt?
That's both. That's both of your
legs.
There
we go. Definitive answer.
It squishes one leg against the other leg. So, yes. No matter which way you put it on, it's going to hurt by either way. So.
Perfect. Yeah. That's the correct answer. Brett falls back a couple of times and Hebner counts his shoulders down. This is an established finish in the WWF. This is how Ric Flair beat Randy Savage for the world title in the autumn of 1992.
I did not know that.
Savage passes out in the figure four, his shoulders hit the mat and the ref counts him down. Another big cheer for Brett rolling the hold over and they end up in the ropes forcing the break.
Another thing on the details, I love how... Again, we've all seen figure four rollover so many times, but Brett makes such a deal of he is using the leg and using his arm on the leg to turn it over, whereas you usually just get the kind of the seesaw with your
body. Momentum roll rather than like an actual grab and roll, yes.
Whereas this, again, it's such a Brett Hart counter.
Yeah. Yes, I know what you mean. Owen is still in control though, draping Brett's leg over the middle rope and kicking away at the hamstring. He pulls him out by the foot for a third dragon screw, but this time it's Brett with the enziguri. Owen takes the chest in the corner bump so hard that on both my viewings I involuntarily just went oh, out loud. He also bounces all the way back out to the middle of that massive WWF ring.
To the extent you can almost see Brett like doing a double take because he kind of didn't expect him to get the distance. Yes.
How is his head at my feet?
And I mean, just shooting back half a step, again, I love the fact Brett did an enziguri because that was, you know, leading up
it's
to this
Owen's
match
move,
and beyond. Absolutely. Yes. Up to this and beyond, it was Owen's big strike move. And obviously, you know, a few years down the line, he used it to, you know, concuss Shawn Michaels in storyline purposes. And Owen was always fabulous at it. And I have always loved Owen Hart's version of the enziguri, where it's a leg capture and then he hits it, rather than the more modern version where people kind of just run up and do an enziguri on someone. I've always loved Owen's version, you know, which...
Yeah, it's again, a counter, it's a reversal, not a...
Absolutely. Yeah, and he always made it look $1 million. And I just love that. Again, it's quite quick and it's quite subtle, but actually, look, there is Brett. He's in desperation point now. He's getting his leg worked over. What's a move he can pull out? Actually, I'm going to pull out Owen's move and use it against him. Yeah. Again, just wonderful storytelling at that point that he did. Because I don't think I ever saw Brett ever do an enziguri before or after.
No.
Can someone correct me if he did? But like, this is like the only time I can remember Brett doing it. And of course, who's the perfect person to do it on? It's against Owen.
So Brett hits a leg drop and a bulldog kind of out of instinct, simply because they're part of his repertoire. But the damage to the knee means he's late to cover on both. And Owen kicks out. Same story with a pile driver and a superplex. This one, Mark, is going in our list of great pile drivers that we've seen. This is almost on Aja Kong level.
The form on this is just so pretty.
Yeah.
It's just such a pretty pile driver.
Yeah, probably didn't hurt a bit either of them. Brett lays in a couple of forearms, and when Owen misses a wild swing of a punch, grabs a sleeper. Owen is able to lunge for the ropes, and as Hebner steps in to get them to break, Owen fucking hoofs Brett in the balls, practically sending him into orbit. It is like, right, I'm not sure if we've got big screens in this venue. The people at the back need to see this low blow.
Yeah.
Owen seizes his moment, locking in the sharpshooter. If you look carefully, you can see Brett subtly correct him when he goes to step through with the wrong leg.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. I don't think I've actually noticed that.
You do. I mean, if you watch Brett's hands when he's on the mat, Owen goes to step through with his left leg and Owen, Brett wriggles his right hand and Owen changes and goes through with the right leg instead.
Amazing.
I love Owen Hart's version of the sharpshooter. It's not crossing of the legs in the armpit. It's 1 foot under one armpit, holding the other leg in his other hand, and that fist in the crook of the knee just looks like an extra little point of pain. It's brilliant. I love it. This is a million miles away from the shit shooter of The Rock.
and I love where Owen evolved that further down the line, where and often against in jobber matches where he'd lock it in and he would just raise one arm in victory as the referee was taking the submission from the other wrestler. Owen would just have the sharpshooter on one arm in the air. You know, again, it was like a mockery of Brett's. It was superb.
I also now like how it's been evolved a step further. I like Daniel Garcia's version where he leans all the way back. Like it's both hands around like the top foot and he leans all the way back with it just to make it different in a company where at least six people use the sharpshooter / scorpion deathlock as a submission hold.
Yeah.
Brett repeatedly pounds the mat, but the tap out is not a thing in 1994 American wrestling. If you want to get super nerdy, the first tap to a submission hold on US wrestling TV that I can find appears to be Koji Nakagawa tapping out to the Tasmission on ECW TV in December 1995. I'm sure somebody will correct me, but that's what I can find. Anyway, Brett powers up and reverses the hold, but Owen is too close to the ropes and gets them straight away. So you get that 1 second of crowd pop. It's like, oh, Brett's got the move on that we wanted to see, but Owen is able to get out of it straight away without even needing to sell it. They go to a corner. Owen reverses a cross corner whip and Brett hits the buckles back first, because you always need to specify when it's Bret Hart. He puts a boot up for Owen's charge and it spins Owen around when he runs into it. Brett hops up onto the middle and then into a victory roll, the move that won him King of the Ring last year over Bam Bam Bigelow. Owen, though, steps into it as Brett rolls over and drops to his knees, trapping Brett's shoulders on the mat for the three count. Afterwards, Brett's in disbelief. He got outsmarted and out-wrestled by his cocky little brother. He just wrestled for 20 minutes, hurt his leg, lost and has to fight a giant Samoan for the world title in about 2 hours. If he couldn't win this, how could he possibly win that? Mm. The answer, sadly, is the fat bastard just falls backwards off the ropes and he pins him. I also noticed for the first time watching this, Owen flips Brett off before he makes his exit.
Yeah.
It's a wide shot and his finger is right in Brett's face, but like that definitely wasn't a thing in the WWF of 1994. That probably got you a fine backstage. After the match, unfortunately, Owen is interviewed by Todd Pettengill. Mic work is still not his forte, and nobody has told him to wipe whatever that was off his face.
That big glob of spit that
It's horrible. And it's like, at least three people have seen him between like the ring and the microphone, and nobody's gone, just wipe your face, mate. It's fine. RJ told us what he thought about this as pretty much as soon as we switched the microphones on. I'm going to go to Mark first. What did you think about this match?
I often find my favourite matches are the ones that engage me emotionally and where I end up having a favourite and I want to see them win and I get sucked into it. Now, because of where I'm coming to wrestling from, I didn't have that emotional connection because I didn't grow up with this match. I didn't grow up with these wrestlers. I was following wrestling when Bret Hart was retired and sadly Owen was no longer with us.
Did you because you got into it in 1999, did you see any Bret matches of that year or had he already like been kicked in the head?
I may have. The problem is my 99 WCW worldwide memories are a bit vague. There are
big Batman splashes over them.
There, I remember Benoit from the cage, but mostly I'm remembering things from, say, the 2000 when the Natural Born Thrillers were there. Boy,
that's
dark
fine.
Matches for some weird fucking reason. but yeah, so I don't think I saw Brett wrestle
while he was still active.
Yeah. So I don't have this connection. So it's not a match that sucked me in emotionally. But I think this is one of the best executed matches I've ever seen. I think the level of logic is impeccable. Brett's selling is impeccable. There's so many little details. This is a match where it's like, honestly, I think especially the matches that we've covered up to this point have either been Brett having to face an opponent who is fighting him and trying to not make him look good, like Shawn Michaels, or having to face wrestlers who Brett is having to basically carry and bring up either because they're injured, like Kurt Hennig in the SummerSlam 91 match, or British
Bulldog. They've enjoyed London too much, like Davey Boy.
So it's probably the first time I've seen a Brett match where he's in there with a guy that can play to Brett's strengths, and they're basically pushing each other. And it's one of those matches where you can tell that Brett is just happy working Owen and he feels like they can push each other to do the best they can. And I'm not going to say it's one of my favorite matches, but I think if I wanted to watch a match where I knew the details mattered and where if I wanted to watch a match to see how to make wrestling work, I think this is the one that I would watch. So I've got an awful lot of appreciation for this match.
I am going to say it's one of my favorite matches. I love it. I nominated this one without even thinking about it when I sent in my list. Whenever anyone finds out I'm a wrestling fan and asks me to show them wrestling for the first time, I show them this. It's the simplest story. Younger brother is jealous of older brother's success and wants to prove he's just as good, if not better. And then the match is so perfectly executed. Like, by 2024 standards, this match is 30 years old, for God's sake. It had its 30th anniversary as we record this a week ago, which is crazy. By 2024 standards, it's kind of basic. But in 1994, you weren't getting German suplexes, dragon screws and leaping tombstones, even planchers on regular WWF TV. At this point, WCW had the more up-to-date in-ring style in the US mainstream. My point, though, is every single one of these moves is executed so well. So you can teach a new fan the basics through it. That's a hammerlock, and he's doing it perfectly. That's a German suplex, and he's doing it perfectly. As you've mentioned twice now, Mark, It's beautifully logical. Everything makes perfect sense. There's nothing outlandish. We live in an age where it's an embarrassment of riches for high quality wrestling that's easy to watch, easy to get hold of. But frequently there will be a leap of logic you have to just kind of memory hole or like have to like forgive. Like, for example, the loose sunset flip I mentioned and that kind of thing. There is none of that here. No leaps of logic, nothing out of character.
Like a good example of a modern thing that really gets me is Will Ospreay versus Kazuchika Okada. Almost every one of their matches, Okada will go for a dropkick, Ospreay counters it into a powerbomb. The bit that annoys me every single time, that doesn't work with an Okada dropkick because his legs are never far apart. And so every time Okada has to do the move differently to make the counter work.
Yes.
And I get the idea of, oh, it's cool, it, so therefore it doesn't matter as much, the logic doesn't hold up.
Mm.
But this is a match where shit looks good and it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, yeah. I have easily seen this, like, it's 30 years old, I've easily seen this more than 30 times, and I found even more to enjoy in my two watches for this episode. The ladder match is the fireworks of WrestleMania 10. This is the all-time classic that stands the test of time. RJ, do you have any more flowers to throw at this match?
Oh, yeah, oh, I've got tons. I've got whole bouquets to chuck at this match. You know, we already mentioned some things. You know, there's a beautiful symmetry to the entire match between the two of them. You know, from that early part of the match where Brett is just showing he is the superior wrestler, he is doing the counters. Mm. Actually, you get to the middle of the match, it's Owen who is countering everything Brett is trying to do. Yeah. You know, Owen will go for a move, Brett counters, Owen counters again, which I just think is wonderful. And, you know, you and as you say, as you watch it, you know Brett felt this was Owen's big moment. And actually, he wanted to do the very best to really show that Owen was a fantastic wrestler and give him the best platform.
I mean, this is still probably, to the end, the biggest match of Owen Hart's career.
Oh, definitely. 100%. And like the biggest victory, you know, and while he would go on to, you know, to be Intercontinental Champion, all things like that, I think you're right. This was kind of the big moment for him.
Mm.
I think what was really great as well, you know, by the end of the match, you know, Owen has thrown everything at Brett. He's thrown every dirty trick he's got. And yet actually the victory comes through cunning and skill.
Mm.
Yeah.
So while Owen is like the biggest heel in this match, and it would go on to define his heel character moving forward, where he was cocky, he was brash, he was arrogant, he was embittered about being Brett's younger brother still following this match.
Yes.
You know, he was forever in Brett's shadow, and which, you know, on a personal level could mentally destroy someone, but actually Owen played that character superbly, you know, into the next couple of years.
Yeah.
But actually at the end of the day, he beat him with a very technical hold, which I just think is poetry that's how. But and as you say, it's because of Brett's superior storytelling. It's a throwback. Brett used this very move to score a big victory at King of the Ring, and here is Owen. He's countered it and said, "Hey, you know, I've got one over you." The biggest thing for me about this match is not only its contained story being, as I said, a masterpiece of storytelling and one of the best matches of WrestleMania, it plays an important part into the rest of the night as well.
Mm.
Brett goes on to, you know, and not only, you know, you could have the argument from a story perspective. Did Brett lose because his mind was elsewhere? His mind is on the title match later in the night. Is that the reason Owen beat him, or did Owen just outclass him? So Brett obviously goes on, he wins the title in the main event. He has that wonderful moment, you know, I believe it was unplanned or he didn't know. All the faces come out, led by the Macho Man. They all come out, hold Brett up, big celebration. But then you get a camera cut to Owen, almost dejected in the aisleway. Mm. And I believe he actually says to the camera, or, you know, he's looking at Brett, but it's the camera's right there. And he goes, "What about me?
Yeah.
What about me?" And I think that is brilliant storytelling that they've just taken a moment to go focus on it. I was like,
and Randy Savage even holds the ropes open to invite him into the celebration, and he won't do it.
And he won't do it. And that's it. And it's like, and it's just, again, the perfect thing for Owen's character at that moment of, okay, he's champion, but I beat him.
Yes.
I beat him early in the night, you know, and surely I should now be the next guy because, you know, it's just wonderful. I love it. And it's just a brilliant moment. It cuts to Owen, then it's obviously back to Brett for the kind of go home celebration. So yeah, it just, for me, I mean, I don't often use this word. I think it's flawless. I really do. I think it's a flawless match from everything that we have said, you know, in regards to it. I think it's flawless storytelling. I think it's flawless action. I know it, you know, it's 30 years old now and doesn't hold up to the action standards of 2024. But I think you could still put that match on today and it would still be well received, you know, incredibly well received.
Yeah. Yeah. This was 4.75 stars in The Observer, currently sits at 9.47 on Cage Match. Uncommonly for matches covered on this show, especially well-known mainstream ones, this didn't come close to the Observer Match of the Year voting for 1994. It got only 72 votes, putting it at the bottom of the honourable mentions for the year.
What?
Yeah. The Shawn and Razor Ladder Match won Match of the Year for 1994. Brett came third in Best Babyface and WrestleMania 10 came fifth in Best Major Show. Yeah, normally I'm running down how like the promotion was Promoter of the Year, this was Match of the Year, the guys were 1 and 2 in Wrestle of the Year. Nope, that was it in 1994. RJ, thank you so much for joining us. This has been great to chat about this match with you.
Absolute pleasure.
The floor is yours to plug whatever you want to plug, tell people where you can be found on the internet, all of that good stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So if you want to follow me and my continuing, perhaps limited wrestling adventures these days, I can be found over on Twitter at RJ Singh is King. And you can also follow me on Instagram, which is also King RJ Singh, because I couldn't get the handles both the same, which is really annoying. And someone on Instagram had already taken RJ Singh is King, so I had to use the flip one. But yeah, you can keep track of all like my upcoming matches and shows I'm going to be in around the country. I'm still here. I'm still doing it for the time being. Still enjoying it, and you know,
showing the young'uns how it's done.
Take, you know, again, and just going back to what you said, a lot of what I do now is very storytelling. It's something in my earlier years of wrestling, I didn't have that appreciation for, which I absolutely do now, which is why I get, you know, watching matches like this is such a pleasure. So yeah, and if anyone wants any opinions on the DDT as a finisher, then it's if you come onto my Twitter, it's very obvious of my opinion on that. So.
I was mentioning to Mark earlier, it's really funny, like having DMs ping up from the DDT King. As for this show, you can go to linktr.ee/mustseematches for all the ways to subscribe, links to the full list of nominations and much more. We are at mustseematches on Twitter, Instagram, Threads and Blue Sky. We have a Discord, bit.ly/mustseematchesdiscord. You can come and have a chat there. I am at Kieran Edits on Twitter and Mark is...
@monkey_buckles.
I also have another show. Every month, Nothing and Like It chronicles the UK's Frontier Wrestling Alliance's adventures on television. You can find everything to do with that at linktr.ee/fwapod. We will eventually get to the stuff that I made, and boy, are we going to give that a kick in. Episode 6 will either be out by the time you hear this or out in a couple of days, and I believe it features the very first on-camera glimpse of our guest.
Yeah, fantastic. debut of the little dragon, Rush Jordan.
There yeah, we'll get to see you have, I think it's going to be a couple of months before we get to see you have a match, but you're there at the end of chasing away the old school as they try to set Alex Shane on fire. These days, some people might just let them. Next week, our highest rated tag match and our final visit to All Japan. It's the Battle of the Pillars as Kenta Kobashi and Mitsuhara Misawa take on Akira Taue and Toshiaki Kawada on June the 9th, 1995. And joining us will be... Oh boy, it is the return of the notorious MOJ. Modge will be back. Thanks very much for listening, and goodbye.